Narayanam namaskritya naram shiva narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tato jayam udirayat. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 3, Chapter entitled Pure Devotional Service. Text number 18. Text number 19. Swavidvara Harstra Karai.
Swavidvara Harstra Karai.
Samstuta Purusha Pashu.
Samstuta Purusha Pashu.
Nayakarna Pato Peto.
Nayakarna Pato Peto.
Jatu Nama Gadagraja.
Jatu Nama Gadagraja.
Swavid Virahastra Karai.
Swavid Virahastra Karai.
Samstuta Purusha Pashu.
Samstuta Purusha Pashu.
Nayatkarna Pato Peto.
Nayatkarna Pato Peto.
Jatu Nama Gadagraja.
Jatu Nama Gadagraja.
Swavidvara Harash. Swavidvara Hastra Karai.
Swavidvara Hastra Karai.
Samstuta Purush. Purush. Sorry. Samstuta Purusha Pashu.
Samstuta Purusha Pashu.
Nayatkarna Pato Peto.
Nayatkarna Pato Peto.
Jatu Nama Gadagraja.
Jatu Nama Gadagraja.
Shwa.
Shwa.
A dog.
A dog.
Vidvaraha.
Vidvaraha.
The village hog who eats stool.
The village hog who eats stool.
Ushtra.
Ushtra.
The camel.
The camel.
Karai.
Karai.
And by the asses.
And by the asses.
Samstuta.
Samstuta.
Perfectly praised.
Perfectly praised.
Purusha.
Purusha.
A person.
Yes.
Pashu.
Pashu.
Animal.
Na.
Never.
Never.
Yet.
Yet.
Of him.
Okay.
Karna.
Karna.
Ear.
Ear.
Pata.
Pata.
Path.
Path.
Upeta.
Upeta.
Reached.
Reached.
Jatu.
Jatu.
At any time.
At any time.
Narma.
Narma.
The holy name.
Gadagraja.
Lord Krishna.
Lord Krishna.
The deliverer from all evils. Translation and Prabhupada by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Men who are like dogs, hogs, camels, and asses praise those men who never listen to the transcendental pastimes of Lord Sri Krishna, the deliverer from all evils. Translation responsibly. Men who are like dogs, hogs, camels, and asses.
Men who are like dogs, hogs, camels, and asses.
Praise those men who never listen.
Praise those men who never listen.
To the transcendental pastimes of Lord Sri Krishna.
To the transcendental pastimes of Lord Sri Krishna.
The deliverer from evils.
The deliverer from evils.
Purport. The general mass of people, unless they are trained systematically for a higher standard of life in spiritual values, are no better than animals. And in this verse, they have particularly been put on the levels of dogs, hogs, camels, and asses. Modern university education practically prepares one to acquire a doggish mentality with which to accept the service of a greater master. After finishing a so-called education, the so-called educated persons move like dogs from door to door with applications for some service, and mostly they are driven away, informed of no vacancy, as dogs are negligible animals and serve the master faithfully for bits of bread, A man serves a master faithfully without sufficient rewards. Persons who have no discrimination in the matter of foodstuff and who eat all sorts of rubbish are compared to hogs. Hogs are very much attached to eating stools. So stools are kind of foodstuff for a particular type of animal. And even stones are edibles for a particular type of animal or bird. But the human being is not meant for eating everything and anything. He is meant to eat grains, vegetables, fruits, milk, sugar, etc. Animal food is not meant for the human being. For chewing solid food, the human being has a particular type of teeth, meant for cutting fruits and vegetables. The human being is endowed with two canine teeth as a concession for persons who will eat animal food at any cost. It is known to everyone that one man's food is another man's poison. Human beings are expected to accept the remnants of food offered to Lord Sri Krishna, and the Lord accepts foodstuff from the categories of leaves, flowers, fruits, etc. Bhagavad Gita 9.26. As prescribed by Vedic scriptures, no animal food is offered to the Lord. He should not imitate the animals to derive Therefore, a human being is meant to eat a particular type of food. He should not imitate the animals to derive so-called vitamin values. Therefore, a person who has no discrimination in regard to eating is compared to a hog. The camel is a kind of animal that takes pleasure in eating thorns. A person who wants to enjoy family life or worldly life of so-called enjoyment is compared to the camel. Materialistic life is full of thorns, and so one should live only by the prescribed method of Vedic regulations just to make the best use of the bag bargain. Life in the material world is maintained by sucking one's own blood. The central point of attraction for material enjoyment is sex life. To enjoy sex life is to suck one's own blood, and there is not much more to be explained in this connection. The camel also sucks its own blood while chewing thorny twigs. The thorns the camel eats cut the tongue of the camel, and so blood begins to flow from the camel's mouth. The thorns mixed with fresh blood create a taste for the foolish camel, and so he enjoys the thorn-eating business with false pleasure. Similarly, the great business magnates, industrialists who work very hard to earn money by different ways and questionable means, eat the thorny results of their actions mixed with their own blood. Therefore, the Bhagavatam has situated these diseased fellows along with the camels. The ass is an animal who is celebrated as the greatest fool, even amongst the animals. The ass works very hard and carries burdens of the maximum weight without making profit for itself. Human life is meant for earning values. This life is called artadam, or that which can deliver values. And what is the greatest value of life? It is to return home, back to Godhead, as indicated in the Bhagavad Gita 8.15. One's selfishness must be aimed at the point of going back to Godhead. The ass does not know his self-interest, and it works very hard for others only. A person who works very hard for others only, forgetting his personal interest available in the human form of life as compared to the ass. In the Brahma Vaivarta Purana, it is said, the human life is so important that even the demigods and the higher planets sometimes aspire for a human body on this earth, because in the human body, only one can easily go back to Godhead. In spite of having obtained such an important body, if one does not re-establish his lost eternal relationship with Govinda, Lord Krishna, he is certainly a fool and has forgotten his self-interest. This human form of material body is obtained by a gradual process of evolution to one body after another in the cycle of 8,400,000 varieties of life. And the poor man, forgetting this importance for his own interest, involves himself in so many illusory engagements for uplifting the position of others as a leader of political emancipation and economic development. There is no harm in trying for political emancipation or economic development, but one should not forget the real aim of life. All such philanthropic activities must be dovetailed to returning to Godhead. One who does not know this is compared to the ass who works only for others without their or his own welfare in mind. The ass is generally engaged by the washerman, whose social position is not very respectable. And the special qualification of the ass is that it is very much accustomed to be kicked by the opposite sex. When the ass begs for sexual intercourse, he is kicked by the fair sex, yet he still follows the female for sexual pleasure. A henpecked man is compared, therefore, to the ass. The general mass of people work very hard, especially in the age of Kali. In this age, the human being is actually engaged in the work of an ass, carrying heavy burdens and driving thela and rickshaws. The so-called advancement of human civilization has engaged a human being in the work of an ass. The laborers in great factories and workshops are also engaged in such burdensome work. And after working hard during the day, the poor laborer has to again be kicked by the fair sex, not only for sex enjoyment, but also so many household affairs. So Srimad Bhagavatam's categorization of the common man without any spiritual enlightenment into the society of dogs, hogs, camels and asses is not at all an exaggeration. The leaders of such ignorant masses of people may feel very proud of being adored by such a number of dogs and hogs, but that is not very flattering. The Bhagavatam openly declares that although a person may be a great leader of such dogs and hogs disguised as men, if he has no taste for being enlightened in the science of Krishna, such a leader is also an animal and nothing more. He may be designated as a powerful, strong animal or a big animal, but in the estimation of Srimad Bhagavatam, he is never given a place in the category of man on account of his atheistic temperament. Or, in other words, such godless leaders of dogs and hog-like men are bigger animals with the qualities of animals in greater proportion. Omigyan timadandasya ginanja shalakaya chakshurin manitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manobishtam stapitam yena bhutale swayam rupa kidamaya dadati swabhadantikam vansha kaupa tarubhyascha kripa sindhu vyevacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishna vebhyo namo namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktivrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So it's a very famous part of Srimad Bhagavatam. The verses are often quoted. Prabhupada would quote these verses quite often. It's one of my favourite parts of the Bhagavatam. Some of the verses are extremely powerful. And if we meditate on them, we will get deep realisation. When we study Shastra, it is called Swajaya. Swa means oneself. Jaya means to meditate. So when we study Srimad Bhagavatam or any Prabhupada's books, we're doing self-study, and it's called Swajaya. It means that we are being analytical, or we're analysing ourselves. That is the purpose of our study, to see how we compare to what is being spoken of in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, if you look in the Bhagavatam, the standard of devotional service is given. Savai Pumsam Paro Dhammo Yato Bhaktir Hoksaje Ahoituki Apratihata. Devotional service must be unmotivated and it must be uninterrupted. That is the standard. So when we read the Bhagavatam, we're analysing, am I like that? Am I unmotivated when I do my devotional service? Or are there motivations involved? Do I have other things that motivate me to do my service except the pleasure of Krishna? And are we apratihata? Are we constantly engaged to the best of our ability in Krishna service? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says you can't be constantly engaged in Krishna service because you have to take bath, you have to eat, you have to sleep. So it's not, you know, those activities are not directly engaged in Krishna service in one sense. When you're sleeping, you're resting your body so you can serve Krishna more the next day or when you wake up. So when you're sleeping, you're not really serving Krishna unless you're Paramahamsa, like Srila Prabhupada, who did not sleep. You know, even when he was unconscious, still he was conscious of Krishna. But for the rest of us, it's a marginal activity. Yeah? It's dovetailed in devotional service. We have to sleep so we can do service to Krishna. But in and of itself, it's not actually, we're not actually doing anything devotional while we're doing it. Or when we're in the bath, we're cleaning our body. We're not actually doing anything devotional at that point in time. But we are preparing ourselves. No? Solcham is a quality of the devotee. He has to be clean to serve Krishna. Prabhupada says cleanliness is godliness. And in the spiritual world, everything is impeccable. Everything is completely clean all the time. In the third canto of the Bhagavatam, when the Kumaras go to Vaikuntha, some devotees are cleaning. But Prabhupada mentions in the purport, there's nothing to actually clean. Because everything's already clean. It's the spiritual world. It doesn't get dirty. There is no dust like that. But still, because they have the bhav, or the mood of service, then everyone is active, they're all cleaning, they're all doing some activity. But there is nothing there to clean. But here in this material world, if we don't keep clean, everything deteriorates very quickly. So cleanliness is godliness. It is necessary. And devotees need to be trained properly, what is cleanliness, so that they can approach the deity respectfully for his pleasure. So, there are many, many verses here within this section of the Bhagavatam. And they are teaching us how to come closer to Krishna. So we should meditate very carefully on these verses. They're very powerful verses. This particular one, Prabhupada would often quote. Srila Prabhupada's spiritual master, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, was known as Simha Guru, Lion Guru. He was ferocious. And even his preaching method was called the chopping technique. Chop, just hit. So sometimes even his disciples would feel uncomfortable with his methodology or his type of preaching, how he would chop like that. But that was his methodology. That's how he would preach. Even it is said, if you read Raya Vishnu, if you read his biographies, you'll see that sometimes he would walk down the street in Kolkata, and across the road there was a Mayavadi sannyasi. So he would cross the road and grab him and shake him and say, "Why are you cheating the people? Why are you cheating the people?" And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was feared by the Mayavadis. He was feared by others who were not Gaudiya Vaishnavas or Vaishnavas, because he was so powerful. Prabhupada said, "I've learned this technique from my spiritual master." Prabhupada was also like that. If you read Prabhupada's preaching, or if you hear Prabhupada's preaching, it's also like this chopping technique. Just like at the moment, we have one boy who's staying with us at the farm. His name is Jackson. We're trying to help him become Krishna conscious. So Manigriva Prabhu gave him Prabhupada's lectures. So he's listening to them 24 hours a day. He just has them playing. You were there? Was he playing when you were? You can't remember, but he's playing at the moment 24 hours a day. Now you walk in the ashram and just like Prabhupada just playing 24 hours. So he came out the other morning and he said, you know, he's been listening to Prabhupada for 2 hours or 6 hours or 12 hours straight. And he said, "Prabhupada just keeps saying, 'Muda, rascal. You are Muda. You are rascal. A kick on your face. What will you do? A kick on your face. What will you do?'" Well, this is Prabhupada. And he said, Prabhupada said, "I inherited this from my Guru Maharaj." This is Prabhupada's style of preaching. Very forceful. Like that. We should not imitate Srila Prabhupada. Because Prabhupada said, "I am an old man." When an old man says something very heavy, then it is appropriate. But if we start preaching to the general public like that, then it will not have the same effect. So we follow Prabhupada, but we don't imitate Prabhupada. We don't suddenly all become, you know, Simha Gurus, and we all start chastising everyone who we meet. You know, you're on book distribution on Swanston Street. "Rascal! Come here. Take this book. What are you doing with your life? You are Muta." It won't work. It's not appropriate for us to do like that. Prabhupada was preaching one time, and There was one, he was a professor or someone, from like a scientist or a professor or something. He was sitting there and Prabhupada was sitting behind the desk and Prabhupada had some disciples sitting next to him. And then Srila Prabhupada, he turned to his disciples and he said, what does Krishna call someone in the Bhagavad Gita who is denying the personal existence of God? Mutha, Prabhupada. They are mutha. What does mutha mean? Ass. They are ass. Like that. And Prabhupada would look at the person and say to his disciples, what do we call someone who is like that? And they'd say, ass, Prabhupada. And then Prabhupada would look at him. And then Prabhupada would say, I am not saying. Krishna is saying. But Prabhupada would just hit very forcefully. Even here in Melbourne Town Hall, one man stood up and he was challenging Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, sit down. Sit down. And then the man was challenging, I am God. Prabhupada said, I kick on your face. What will you do? Sit down. He's very forceful in his preaching. So, these verses within the Bhagavatam, if we meditate on them very deeply, we will see that they have great benefit for us. Now, this particular one is famous. Prabhupada would often say, dogs, hogs, camels, and asses. And Prabhupada says in the purport, he said, it is not an elaboration or an exaggeration on the part of the Bhagavatam to call modern human society these names. You know, to say that human society are hogs, or they're dogs, or they're camels, or they're asses, this is not an exaggeration. The Bhagavatam is saying, no, actually, this is the position of an atheistic or godless society. And if you see, practically, people are like that. They're dogs. What does Prabhupada say in the purport? He elaborates, what is a dog? A dog is that you get a degree, you go to university. So if you go to university, you're supposed to be one of the higher members of our society. You go to university, you get your degree in IT, or whatever it is that you get, and then you go out and you can't get a job. Right? And then you walk around, right, like a dog going from door to door trying to find something to eat, begging, please give me something, please give me something, please give me something. And you can't get anything. And once you get a job, it's so insecure, because these days they put everyone on contract, because everything's based on economics. It's not based on valuing the staff. Just like Myers, we have this company, Myer, in Melbourne, very big company in Australia. It's one of the biggest companies in Australia. 50 years ago, if you were a member of the company, just to be a staff member, just one of the cash register girls, or just one of the girls behind the makeup counter, or the guy out the back who loads all the stock into the, you know, just everyone in the company had a cut of the annual profits of the company. That's how it was set up, right? Because the boss or the CEOs of the company, they cared for the staff. Just like recently we had that bus company was sold in Melbourne, one of the big bus companies. What's it called? Starts with G. Grenfell's, or which one is it? Yeah, Grinda, like that. So big bus company, Prabhu Charan, one of the devotees also, he is a manager in that company also. So they sold the company very recently for something like $300 million. And the guy who had been running the company, it was a family business, he'd run the company for many, many years. When he left the company, it was only last year, he gave everyone in the company, according to how long they'd been in the company, a payout, part of the gross profit. Because he just made $300 million. You know, so he took $10 million or $20 million or $100 million, whatever it was, divided it up, and according to how long you're in the company for, he gave you a payment, a lump sum. So this is how it was previously. But now, because everything is economically driven and it's based on greed, they just put you on a contract, and they don't care. They'll work you as hard as they can, and as soon as your contract's gone, if you're redundant, or if they've developed the computer systems to a point that the computer can do more than the staff, then they'll just get rid of you. Right? And a friend of my family, when I was young, he was a businessman, and he used to say that, why should I employ 10 people when I can employ one person and a computer? Right? And I remember him having conversations at the dinner table and saying that one day I won't even need staff, I can just have computers. So that's the position in Kali Yuga. So people have to become like dogs. The dog also has some good qualities. It is said the Vaishnava should also learn from the dog. Because everything is our guru. Everyone is our guru. And there are four good qualities of the dog. Right? One of the good qualities of the dog is that he is very loyal to the master. Right? And Prabhupada said, what is this Kanti Mala? Prabhupada said, it is dog collar. It means I have a master. We should be very happy. We have a master. Someone loves us. Someone is there to look after us. Someone cares about us. So that is the dog collar. So the dog is very loyal to the master. The dog, as soon as he wakes up, he is alert. So we're not very good dogs. We wake up, just like I was sleeping upstairs last night. I woke up and I looked around for about 10 seconds. I'm thinking, where am I? You know, where am I at the farm? You know, am I in India? You know, am I Krishna Kattar's house? Like, where am I? Like that. And then after 10, I'm not alert. I haven't learned this quality of the dog. But you see, Prabhupada, sometimes he would wake up and he would keep having the same conversation that he had had when he fell asleep. Sometimes he was with a devotee and he was having a conversation, he would nod off, and then an hour or two later he would wake up and just continue. So we should be alert as soon as we wake up. The dog is also satisfied with whatever he gets to eat. Whatever he gets, then he's satisfied. He's not fussy. Just whatever you give him, he will be satisfied. We should also be like that. What is the other quality? I can't remember. The dog also has one more quality. Four good qualities of a dog. Okay. Anyway, there's three good qualities. So we should have some good qualities of the dog. But we shouldn't be like a dog that we just work for a master who is just exploiting us, which is very difficult. What's that? Very good hearing. Is that one of them? Is it? Okay. He said very good hearing. I'm not sure if that is or not, but it could be. Have you got that? Is that written down somewhere? Oh, you've read it. Okay, like that. So he's also a very good hero, like that. So, as much as possible, devotees, they should develop businesses where they can all work amongst themselves. Just like in the UK, in England, the devotees have developed a cheesecake business. So they're making cheesecakes, which are prasadam, and they're selling them commercially. And they're employing many devotees. So devotees need to learn to make these kind of businesses. Open restaurants and just sell prasadam. There's so many different businesses we can do. Just like if you go up to Brisbane, from the Sunshine Coast to the Gold Coast, if you drive for 3 hours, there are 11 or 12 devotee restaurants which are employing many, many devotees. Some are temple-owned, many of them are private. So devotees should work with each other and for ourselves. We don't have to work like dogs. But we have to work out how to do that. It's not easy to do that. Because the way the modern system is that, you know, sometimes you have to work for the dogs, the bigger dogs, for some time. But devotees, we have to learn. Just like if you look at the older religions, like the Amish, like the Jewish. The Jewish, they're all employed by each other. Jews don't work for other people. You'll notice that if you go into their communities. The Jews, they don't work for others. Right? It's all amongst themselves. Even if they take loans, they don't take loans from banks, they take loans from each other. Because they have wealth accumulated. Because for centuries and centuries they've developed this economic base. So devotees, we need to do that. We're just a young movement. But in due course of time, we have to develop this kind of infrastructure. Just like in Mumbai, we have this Bhaktivedanta Hospital. So devotees were very intelligent. They built a hospital. And all the devotees were doctors and nurses and so many different skills that they had, many of them are working for this hospital. So you work for devotees. And Kripa Sindhu Prabhu, who used to be here in Melbourne, he's over there now and he's working for the hospital. And he said to me, he said, I don't get paid as much as I do outside, but I don't have to work like a dog either. He can do his morning program, he can go to work at 10 in the morning, he can work an extra hour in the evening. It's a little bit flexible, you know, because everyone's a devotee, so they treat you like a normal person, like that. And everyone's happy. Okay, maybe you don't get as much money, but at least we're working in a normal environment. So dogs, and then hog. Hog will eat anything. And this one point, and Prabhupada would kick on this point. Prabhupada said, when I preach, I am like a karate fighter. Karate fighter, he finds your weak spot, and he kicks you, and he kicks you, and he kicks you until you go down. Prabhupada said, when I preach, I am like a karate fighter. I just find the weak spot and I kick it and I kick it and I kick it until they go down. And you see, whenever he preached, basically it was like that. And what was the one thing that he preached on when he preached to the Western people, basically? Why are you killing the animals? That was basically his message. Right? And you see in that famous video where he's speaking to the cardinal in France, then he's speaking to him and he just keeps coming and the cardinal keeps going off trying to change the topic. Prabhupada just keeps bringing it back. Why are you killing the animals? Right? And this one point is what is going to destroy human modern civilization. Or you could say is destroying modern civilization. We're on the verge of, you know, economic disasters. Right? By Friday, right, if the American government doesn't reconcile itself, it's going to default for the first time in history. And this could have massive economic repercussions for the planet. The superpower, the strongest economy on the earth, is about to fold. And China, which is about to become the superpower, it looks like, is also so engrossed in debt, it's a totally false economy also. They're basing their economies on something which is completely false, and they'll just default one after another. We've been seeing all the minor economies default. Spain, Ireland, Portugal, they've all been Greece, all been defaulting. Right, very recently. Now the big economies are also going to fault in that way. So it is all based on this one problem, right? Because they're eating the wrong things, right? And they're treating the earth in the wrong way. Right? As we've said many times, when America was founded 250 years ago, the occupation for 97% of the American population was agriculture. Now the amount of population in America which are involved in agriculture is 1%. So we've gone away from this natural type of living to this artificial type of living, and this is causing unlimited problems. And it's based on a meat-centered diet. And this meat-centered diet is going to cause unlimited problems in our society. And Australia will get its karma in due course of time also. At this point in time, our government is building Australia's biggest abattoir, slaughterhouse, in the back of South Australia, right? Much bigger than anyone, to increase the production. Because 50% of Australia's landmass, right, is for beef cattle. Right? If you look at Australia, 50% of it is for beef. Right? And we're not keeping up with our production. We want to produce more and more and more and sell it more, right, overseas. So therefore, so that amount of karma, which is involved in that one activity, that will destroy Australia in due course of time. Right? The modern society will crumble, right? Because the karmic reactions are severe. Right? So, dogs, hogs, camels. What does the camel do? Right? Chews its own blood. Right? Eats the thorns. Right? Cuts its lips. Right? And eats, because blood tastes salty. Right? And salt is a pleasant taste. We like to eat salt. If you don't put salt in something, there's no salt in the prasadam, we don't like it. Right? Oh, there's no salt. As soon as there's no salt, we know. So blood is salty, so the taste of blood is pleasant, right? Because of the saltiness. So the camel is eating his own blood. Right? And Prabhupada and the Bhagavad Gita is saying this is modern sex life. Because modern culture is based on one thing. Right? Prabhupada says in the very first purport, 111 of Srimad Bhagavatam, he says sex life is the active principle of the material world. This whole world is going on for one reason, sex life. You take sex life out of the picture, right? There's no motivation for anything. Right? Everyone's working hard for one reason, because there's sex life. And Prabhupada would always say this. I remember one time I was in Ferntree Gully. I was out on collection when I was brahmachari, used to collect for the temple. So I went to one of the public toilets. So I was in the toilet, and in the next toilet they were cleaning, the men who cleaned the toilets for the council. And I was listening to their conversation, and it was almost, it was like it was coming out of one of Prabhupada's lectures. It was almost like you know, someone had a tape on in the next, yeah. And that one man was saying to the other man, I work so hard all day. Practically, he says, I work like a dog. so early in the morning to so late at night. I'm so tired when I get home. And when I get home, my wife is so unhappy. And then I get a little bit of dinner to eat, I watch a little bit of television, and then finally I come to her for a little bit of sex life, and she says, no, I'm too tired. And she goes to sleep, and that's the end of my day. He said, what am I doing? Like he said, what am I doing this for? Like he was saying to another guy. That was his realization. But then what does he do the next day? Gets up, goes to work, works like a dog, right, all day, like a camel, all day, comes home, expects to get some sex pleasure, and it doesn't happen. And this is material life. Right? Prabhupada says, man is good, woman is good, but together they are bad. That's the material world. Right? Lord Brahma said, you can't live with them, and you can't live without them. And he was referring to women. That's the nature of the material world. Right? As soon as you put man and woman together, there are going to be problems. Unless you're advanced in Krishna consciousness. Unless you're seeing beyond the bodily platform of life. Simply you will see material life means problems. Because it's based on the mode of passion. A mode of passion, Krishna says in Gita, right? It is nectarian in the beginning. That's why we get into it in the first place. That's why men and women get together. Because it's nectarian in the beginning. It's a honeymoon. Right? You see everyone when they're on their honeymoon. See the young boys, the brahmacharis, and brahmacharis, when they get together, it's like the honeymoon period. And you're sitting back as an older grihastha and you're watching. And you're just saying, you're just waiting for it to all begin to dissipate like that. Because that is the nature of the mature. It's nectar in the beginning, but it becomes like poison in the end. So that is the nature of the material world. So, material civilization, they are like camels. They're simply trying to extract some pleasure, but actually they're killing themselves. Right? It says in the Ayurveda, when a man discharges his semen, it takes 64 drops of blood to make one drop of semen. Right? And you see the modern men, because they're discharging so much semen, they're discharging so much of their vitality. And then what happens in the old age? The brain deteriorates. Because it explains in Ayurveda that if you don't discharge the semen, the semen goes into the brain and it makes the brain very fertile. But when they become old, because of discharging the semen, the brain becomes very weak and they develop these diseases like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. My uncle has Alzheimer's disease. He's only 55, so he's not even an old man. And I saw him the other day because my grandfather's passing away, so the family's spending time with the grandfather because he's about to leave. So I saw him, I hadn't seen him for a couple of years, and he's shaking. Like his right hand, he can't stop shaking it. It just shakes all the time. Because he has, might be Parkinson's actually, I think he's got Parkinson's. So just all the time. And I know he was a very lusty person. He used to boast all the time about his lust. Right? And he had many affairs even when he was married. But now he's getting the result. The body is just like that. And he actually said to me last time I saw him, he said, my life used to be good. But this is the mode of passion. Good means mode of passion. It was nectar in the beginning, but now it's destroyed. Hogs, dogs, camels, and finally, ass. What is the ass? Carries a big load all day for the master. Why? Because at the end of the day he thinks, I can be with the female ass. I'll work hard as long as I can be with the female ass. And then what does she do? Kicks in the face. It's the nature of male-female relationships, right? In the material sense. Devotees should not be like that. Devotees should be elevated. If you look at the non-devotees, they just get kicked in the face by women, right? And then men can be quite horrible as well. That's the nature of the material world. You'll see in the every time you read one of those glossy magazines, every week when I go to the supermarket to buy some milk and some groceries, and they have all the glossy magazines next to the counter, right? And you just see every week someone's just been kicked in the face. Right? One of the superstars, Brad Pitt or someone, he's just standing there like bang. Yeah, Angelina Jolie's just gone smack, just kicking it, and just standing there on the front cover of the magazine, like bang, just been hit. I don't know how they get these photographs of them, but But this is the nature of the material world. When between men and women, if they're not devotees, and if Krishna is not in the centre of the relationship, and if they don't treat each other respectfully, it just becomes materialistic, which means you just get kicked. That is the nature of the material world. So, what is the answer? Is there hope? Is there something beyond all of this? Yes, there is. And if you read these series of verses, if you get to the second last verse in this chapter, what does the second last verse tell us? The second last verse glorifies the chanting of the holy name of Krishna. And it says, another very famous verse, one who chants the holy name of Krishna, when you are chanting, if tears do not come from your eyes when you are chanting, the Bhagavatam says your heart is steel framed. So what does that mean? That means all of our hearts are steel framed. Because do we cry when we chant? Should we be crying when we chant? Yeah, tears should be coming like that. Not artificially, or not, how would you say it, not publicly. If they do come, they should not be made public. Prabhupada, you see, he was very careful not to publicly to display these emotions, but it did happen. There were several times, you know, 4, 5, 6 times, maybe more, that Prabhupada went into ecstasy while chanting Jai Radha Madhava or chanting different songs. One time he was in Mayapur in front of, you know, 300 or 400 devotees at the festival. He was chanting Jai Radha Madhava before class. In the middle of chanting, he just stopped. And then tears just began to glide down his face. And he was like that for 3 or 4 minutes. And then finally he opened his eyes and he said, just chant Hare Krishna. And he went up to, he didn't even give class, he just went up to his room. He said, just chant Hare Krishna. And he just left like that. So, you know, the tears would come. Prabhupada was very careful not to display those things, because then it would become imitated. Everyone in the movement would start doing it and become some sahajiya thing, because we're not on that level yet. But though that is actually the result of chanting. Bhagavatam clearly says, right, that if you are chanting the holy name of the Lord and tears are not coming from your eyes, then your frame is steel-hearted. So you have to think very carefully about all of these things. One time I was at, it's interesting because today is Ekadashi. Today is one of the most powerful Ekadashis of the year. Today is the disappearance day of the teen Goswamis, or the 3 Goswamis, Raghunath Das Goswami, Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, and Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami. They all disappeared on this day in different years. Today at Radhakund, where their samadhis are, there's a big festival which happens every year. So today is a very powerful day, a very important day in our Gaudiya Vaishnava calendar. So, one time I was there at Radhakund in front of Raghunath Das Goswami's Bhajan Kutia, and I was chanting my japa. I like to chant there whenever I go to Vrindavan. And there was a beautiful picture there in the Bhajan Kutia, and Raghunath Das Goswami, he was chanting, and Srimati Radharani is behind him with the veil. You know the story, right? And Krishna's behind him. He used to chant there, and he didn't have a bhajan kutia, because he was so absorbed in bhajan, he didn't even build himself a little hut. So he was chanting, and the tigers, because Vrindavan used to be a jungle, the tigers came down, and they were right next to him, drinking the water out of Shamakund. And he didn't even know the tigers were there, he was just chanting and chanting and chanting. And Sanatana Goswami was on the other side of the kund, and he looked over, and he was shocked. The tigers were right next to him. And then he looked behind, Raghunath Das, and Krishna was standing there, and Krishna looked at Sanatana Goswami and he smiled and then disappeared. So he ran around the kund, right, and he said to the tigers must have left, and he said to Raghunath Das, he said, you can't do this. He said, build yourself a bhajan kutia, because Krishna is, you're making Krishna serve you. Krishna has to come here and look after you so the tigers don't eat you. So he said, yes, I'll build a kutia. But he didn't build one, he just kept chanting because he was absorbed. So then it was very hot, it gets very hot in Vrindavan in the summer season. So he was just chanting, and while he was chanting, his material body was just perspiring. So Radharani, she took her veil, and she was standing behind him, and she was holding the veil, blocking the sun, so that he wouldn't get hot, but she was perspiring. And Sanat Goswami was on the other side of the kund, and then he looked and he saw Radharani. Radharani smiled and she disappeared. So he came around and he said to Raghunath, they said, this is enough. Now you're making Radharani serve you. So this is not appropriate. Build yourself a kutia. So then Raghunath does, he built, after that, when he heard Radharani was serving him, then he built a kutia. So I was sitting there chanting, and one old, I was the only one there, and one old Bengali Mataji, she came, dressed in white, very old Bengali Mataji, and she came and she offered her obeisances, and she stood up and she looked at that picture, and immediately tears came out of her eyes. It was not artificial, right? It was deep, deep, deep Krishna conscious realization. Just by seeing the picture, she began to, and she turned around and she said something to me in Bengali. I couldn't even understand what she was saying, but she was saying, just look. Radharani is serving Krishna, is serving Raghunath Das. Just look, she was in ecstasy and tears. And I understood this is what the Bhagavatam is about. When we're chanting, tears should come from the eyes. There should be so much feeling for Krishna. The tears should come from the eyes. But for us, we find it hard just to stay awake when we're chanting, or to chant attentively. At least we have to do that. Then we can progress in Krishna consciousness. So the Bhagavatam is saying this is the solution for all the problems of the world, is to chant the holy name of Krishna. But it's to chant the holy name properly, which means we have to cultivate the chanting. So on Saturday, Kartik Mas is going to begin. So this is the most holiest month of the year because it is Radharani's month. She is the presiding deity of the month. So it says in Kartik Mas, Giriraj Maharaj, he gave a class one time and he was speaking on nectar of devotion. He was speaking on Kartik. And he said, just like Myers or any big department store, they have the Boxing Day sale. So what do they do? Right? They put all the prices up before Christmas. Everyone goes crazy, buys everything. And then the next day you can get the same stuff, right, for nothing. Right? But everyone gets into this frenzy, I've got to give presents on Christmas Day. But if you're actually intelligent, right, on Christmas Day you just say to everyone, I'm going to buy all your presents tomorrow because it's a lot cheaper. Right? But no one does it. Because everyone gets caught out, it's Christmas, it's green, you know. But actually, the next day you get all the same stuff, but you get it for nothing practically. So Giriraj Maharaj described this is what Kartik is like. Right? Every time you chant one Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, it is like 10,000 Hare Krishna Maha Mantras. You get so much benefit. Thousands and thousands of times more benefit. So one thing I try to do every year when Kartik comes, I try to improve my chanting. Right? Make my chanting a little bit better, right? Make some progress in chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. Right? So this should be our meditation. You know, Kartik is about to begin. Then we should all take sankalpa. Sankalpa means vrat, or we should take vows like that. Even if your vow is not that I'll increase how many rounds I chant, maybe I'll just chant 16, but I'll chant them much, much better than what I normally chant. Or if you can chant more, that's nice also. If you have time, then you chant more. Bhavananda Prabhu, one of Prabhupada's early disciples, he used to chant 25 rounds every day of the Maha Mantra. And he wrote a letter to Prabhupada. He was, at that time, he was the temple president, I think of New York or one of the other temples, back in the early 70s. And he wrote a letter to Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, is it okay if I chant 25 rounds every day? And Prabhupada wrote back and said, yes, you should be chanting more. 16 round minimum. But if you have time, chant more. And he said, this will set an example for the rest of the Vaishnavas in the temple. So if you can, if you have time, chant some more. And if you don't have time, then just chant better. And in Kartik, you should go to Mangalati every day. Try to, as much as you can, adjust your schedule so you can go every day, follow the morning program, and you will get so much benefit. And in the Kartik Mahatmya, it says every day we should offer a ghee lamp to Damodar. He likes this very much. Here we don't offer ghee, we offer candles because it's not practical, or for whatever reason we can't do it. But still you should offer a deep, you should offer a flame to Damodar every day. And you should chant the Damodar Ashtika every day. This is actually ordained in the Kartik Mahatmya. Prabhupada gave us this song, Namamishwaram Satchidanandaru. So we chant this mantra every day. And if we meditate, we should study that mantra as well for the month of Kartik and learn what the words mean. It's a very powerful mantra. So this is the remedy for all the problems. Most of this chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is speaking about the problems in the material world. But then the very end of the chapter says there is one redeeming quality. You have to chant the holy name of Krishna. But you have to chant that holy name properly, attentively, and then you will get the benefit. So we'll stop here and see if there's any questions or comments on what we discussed. Yep, Prabhu?
Courage is the other quality of the dog.
That's the fourth one.
Bravery. You see a little dog and take on a big dog.
Yep.
Without any fear.
Yeah.
Courage.
Courage, okay, that's good. Courage, alert when he wakes up, loyal to the master, and satisfied with whatever he eats.
Despite having a big appetite.
What is it?
Despite having a big appetite.
Yeah, despite having a big appetite. Except for Bhima. Bhima's not like that. Doesn't matter how much he eats, he still wants more. Yeah, but they are very courageous. Like sometimes me and Money, we wrestle at the farm. You know, because Money thinks he's big and strong, so sometimes I get him and, you know, throw him down and like that. So we have wrestling matches, but as soon as me and Money start wrestling, Bhima just attacks me. Because Bhima thinks I'm, you know, sometimes he thinks it's serious between me and Money, so then he just, then, you know, now I'm taking Money and Bhima, and then Malika jumps in and like that. Okay. Any other question or comment? First thing is you have to get up early. That's the first thing. If you go to Mangalati, then between 5 and 7, you can get most of your rounds done. Like that. So then that will help us. If you're struggling to finish the rounds, then get them all done early, as much as possible. And then it'll be much easier to finish. That's not so difficult to complete. Because then, you know, after breakfast, you only have 4 left or 6 left or whatever it is. So. Prabhupada said if you want to stay brahmachari your whole life, you should finish 16 rounds before Mangalati. So the earlier you chant, the better. That's the most practical advice. So Prabhupada said you have to design your day in such a way that you can not help but think of Krishna all the time. So that means you have to go to bed early. You have to get up early. As much as some nights we can't go to bed early because we have late night because we have to preach, but otherwise we should try to go to bed early. Ayurveda says that every hour of sleep before midnight is worth 2 hours of sleep after midnight. So if you go to bed early, you'll feel much more refreshed when you get up in the morning. You won't fall asleep while chanting japa. Any other question? Comment?
Can you tell us more about how to choose
the Vrata Prakati? Choose the
Vrata Prakati? Yeah, you know,
yeah, so don't take vratas which you can't fulfill. That's the most important thing. So don't take vratas which you can't continue the whole kartik. Just like one time I was in Vrindavan, I went to see Burujan Prabhu, and it was probably about, you know, 8 o'clock at night or whatever it was in the evening. And then after that, he said, do you want to stay with me? Because my vrata, one of the vratas I took for Kartik was to read one chapter of Krishna book every day. But then he said to me, because I'm so busy at the moment, you know, so many devotees are coming and so many things, he said, I'm finding it very hard to do this vrata. So he said, don't take vratas unless you can fulfill them. He was doing it, but he said it was very difficult. So you make sure you do vratas that you can actually fulfill. So if you're going to chant one extra round a day, you know, don't say I can chant 32 rounds a day if you can't do it, because you have to manage crossways or you have to do so much service as temple commander or whatever it is. So make sure you can do the service. That's the main thing.
Those kind of vrata has to be, I mean, you do something extra.
Yeah.
For a lot of pleasure. So does it have to be that what you do, something extra, has to be in relation to time? Something extra, you know, to spend extra. extra time to do that work? Or can it not be something, as you mentioned, you know, improve the quality of chanting? So time is not, you're not expanding on time, but quality of the work.
So that's the main thing, because what's the use of chanting 32 rounds if you don't improve your chanting? So you better chant 16 rounds and you're improving the quality during Kartik than to chant 32 and the quality hasn't improved. But then if you can chant more, then just like Srila Prabhupada, one time the devotee said, Prabhupada, you know, he's talking about chanting 16 rounds a day. Should we only chant 16 a day? And Prabhupada said, 16? He said, why not 16,000? He said, when you're chanting, if you're getting taste, nama ruchi, you just want to keep chanting. So you have to see just practically. You have to see what you can do. But the point is you should improve. But the acharyas and Prabhupada have told us that we must offer a candle every day and we must chant Dhamma Dharashtika every day. And then many Vaishnavas, they also chant other ashtikas. Shad Goswami ashtika. So many other ashtikas are there. Shikshastika every day, right? Many ashtikas are there, so you can chant many things like that. So take up ratas, but make sure that you can fulfill them. That's the point. Okay. Any other question?
Much concentration.
Not concentration. Yeah. So that's the same as everyone. Same as everyone. So you read Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6, right? Because Arjuna says the same thing to Krishna. Krishna, my mind is hard to control. Right? So same problem, everyone in the material world. Why is the mind hard to control? Because the nature of mind is chanchal. Chanchal means always moving. Right? Always moving. Right? So because the mind is hard to control, Krishna says, Arjuna says it's very hard to control. Krishna says, okay, two things, abhyas and vairagya. Right? Abhyas means practice. When it goes off, you bring it back. Right? So that takes practice. So you just have to do that. But you'll find that if you keep doing that year after year after year, it does become easier to control. If you follow the process properly, the mind does become easier to control. It never stops floating off. It always takes off. Right, but it becomes easier to bring it back. You bring it back more quickly and you can stay fixed on the mantra for longer periods of time. And then second thing Krishna says is vairagya. Vairagya means detachment. So why is it that the mind's always going off? Because we're attached to so many other things except Krishna's holy name. So you have to make arrangements in your life to become detached gradually from all the things in the material world that you're attached to. So just practice abhyas and vairagya. Become more renounced gradually, right? And become more practice. Just try harder and harder and harder. Just keep trying. And it becomes easier. And it's like anything. Like when I was a kid, I used to play soccer. Right? So my coach told me one time when I was a little kid, because the saying is practice makes perfect. And my coach said, no, no. He said, perfect practice makes perfect. And he would teach us that when we're practicing on Wednesday night for the game on Sunday, you have to practice on Wednesday night like you're playing the game on Sunday, the same intensity. Right? So that's how you have to practice when you're doing devotional service. Right? And then because we were practicing, we got better and better and better at soccer. Right? So it's the same as chanting. If you practice and you keep trying hard, then gradually you get better. It does improve. Is that okay? Okay. Just read chapter 6 of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna explains these things. Any other question? Comment? Because the presiding deity of the month is Srimati Radharani. And anything you do in that month, Radharani becomes very pleased that you're doing that service for Krishna, so she gives special blessings. So that's why the month is so powerful, because it is her month. Kartik. One of Radharani's mother's name is Kirtida. Another name of Radharani's mother is Kartika. And Radharani's name is Kartika. That's one of her names. So it is her month. So when you do any devotional service in that month, it pleases Krishna. It pleases Radharani, and when she becomes pleased, then Krishna accepts our service. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki.